Greetings, friends. This talk introduces the 8 weeks Truth of Happiness course Dhamma study on dependent origination and the five clinging aggregates. The week 8 talks were presented over 2 classes. The first talk is on dependent origination, and the second talk on the five clinging aggregates. This talk was recorded in Frenchtown, New Jersey on January 30th, 2016. Week 8 in the book has dependent origination and the five clinging aggregates. If you notice, that chapter is about 700 pages long, and there's too much in there to even cover in maybe 2 weeks, but I'm only going to touch on dependent origination, and we'll discuss that next week, and then I'll introduce the five clinging aggregates next week's class. And again, if there's any questions as I'm reading this or commenting, just holler. So dependent origination, this is from the Bodhi Sutta, meaning the Awakened Sutta, and that this is from the book, the Udana, one of the books of the Pali Canon. The words of the Buddha, as worldly phenomena is understood, the wise disciple, ever ardent and aware, resting in non-distraction, the Buddha is emphasizing the importance of a well-concentrated mind, resting in non-distraction, all their doubts vanish when the cause of phenomena is rightly discerned or rightly understood. And this phenomena is not... When the Buddha is using the term in this way, he's talking about dukkha. When the cause of dukkha is rightly understood. Now remember, the second noble truth is that craving and clinging originates and perpetuates dukkha. So some people will take this as the Buddha is trying to describe creation in a cosmic way, how everything came to be. He's not. He's just simply, again, keep it in context of the Four Noble Truths. The Buddha is teaching how dukkha arises. The cosmic answer, trying to develop a creationist theme, has no bearing on this. It's absolutely unimportant. We don't have to worry about where we came from, or who started all this. Questions about a supreme being are unimportant in understanding dukkha. So, while you may want to go there, leave that aside as a distraction. It's unimportant in developing full understanding as a human being. At this point, you can ask those questions later. My words, dependent origination teaches the understanding of the ongoing process of 12 causative links that establish and maintain delusion, confusion, and the underlying unsatisfactory experience of life. So the Buddha set out trying to understand suffering and a way of developing a way to put that aside and live a life of lasting peace and happiness. That's what he was interested in. He was not interested in asking and finding an answer to the more grander questions like who are we, where do we come from, although he answered those questions. Very practical teaching. The origination of delusion, confusion, and unsatisfactoriness that is experienced by a self is rooted in ignorance, but a very specific ignorance. The Buddha is not saying that you're human beings, so you're ignorant. In fact, he's really saying just the opposite, that you have the potential to awaken. What he's saying is what's holding you back is a very specific ignorance. It's ignorance of the Four Noble Truths. And what does that mean? It means you don't really understand what's going on, because that's what the Four Noble Truths are about. They describe the problem. Each individual link in the 12-link chain of dependencies, we're talking about dependent origination now, is an observable component of the five clinging aggregates that I'll get into next week. I just want to introduce it now to put in a little bit of context. The five clinging aggregates are dependent on ignorance for the establishment of confusion and stress that results in the experience of craving and clinging. Developing understanding of the Four Noble Truths develops the wisdom that ends ignorance. The importance of these teachings is to understand that the origination of all clinging views of an ego self or anatta are rooted in ignorance. Once understood, craving and clinging can be abandoned, and the 12 causative links in the chain of dependencies unbound. The process of ongoing confusion and stress comes to an end. And any one of these links, once they're penetrated with deep insight and abandoned, the whole 12-link chain of dependencies falls apart. Again, I'm describing in a practical but also conceptual way how to awaken. It's through penetrating this in the way that the Buddha understood dependent origination. Once understood, seeking understanding through magical, mystical, or esoteric teachings will be clearly seen as a distraction and continued eye-making. There's a lot of that done with the idea that I have an inner Buddha nature. The Buddha never taught that. And if I have an inner Buddha nature, how did it get so confused and deluded? It doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. The Buddha saying what you think of yourself, including the concept that you have an inner Buddha nature, is wrong. Let it go. Even the idea that I'm practicing this to achieve some kind of mystical Buddhahood in another realm is a distraction. If you look at that idea closely, I'm just establishing now my ego personality in an accomplishment of being a Buddha. Letting go of all concepts, letting go of all self-referential concepts, is the path to awakening. And so dependent origination describes what happens by maintaining ignorance. It is development of the Eightfold Path that unbinds attachment, ends dukkha, and brings awakening. So nibbana is a Pali word, or nirvana, that describes the awakened mind state. Nibbana means extinguish or unbinding. Cessation of dukkha is the extinguishing of all wrong views that initiate craving and the unbinding of all clinging attachments. But nibbana directly means extinguish, as in putting out the flames of passion that are driven from an ego personality. So again, this is not like we're saying that nibbana is like a Buddhist heaven, but in a sense, it really is heaven. It's a mind that rests in equanimity. The flames of passion have been put out. We rest in nibbana. We rest in equanimity. The Buddha never addressed questions directly that would not lead to ending craving and clinging and the cessation of dukkha. It was a very refined teaching that he gave us. Answering questions about the nature of self originating from a deluded belief in a self would only reinforce delusion and lead to more delusion, confusion, and suffering. These questions were consistently left unanswered as they were improper questions rooted in ignorance. So if I'm developing questions or questions that based on resistance that are rooted in ignorance, and as a teacher or as the Buddha, I entertain the question, I'm just reinforcing the delusion. Do you see that? Do you see why the Buddha refused to even go there? Because it just takes your mind further into distraction. The ego insists, well, I want an answer to this. I want an answer to what happens to me when I let go of all views, or I'm not going to hurt now. There's no answer to it. And if I try to answer it, I'm doing it in a way that's very cruel, because I'm continuing your delusion while saying, I got some answers for you. And the Buddha refused to entertain that cruelty, even though he saw it in all the other spiritual teachers of his time.
He didn't watch any reruns.
Watching the reruns, yeah. That's a good way to put it. The Buddha described these questions as arising from inappropriate views, not even fit for attention. Don't even think about it anymore. Let it go. It's not worth it. Continue with his words. These views will continue to generate confusion and suffering. He teaches what is fit for attention while maintaining the context of the Four Noble Truths. This is what we should be putting our attention on. Understanding stress, understanding the origination of stress, understanding the cessation of stress, and understanding the path leading to the cessation of stress. That's it. When we're mindful of the Dhamma, that's what we need to be mindful of. Not all these other questions that arise, because they're just distractions. Understanding the origination of... Let me leave that for a second. Grasping at precepts and practices, which is another thing that develops, these rituals that we think are important part of practices, refers to assuming an inherent ground of being and engaging in ritualistic practices simply because of the popularity of the doctrine, teacher, or ritual. If engaging or following the doctrine, teacher, or ritual would develop further self-grasping, it should be recognized as deluded and abandoned. And there's a lot of that today, the things that we develop. I was talking to someone who was all excited about, they're in a Tibetan tradition, and they've just been given the okay to begin their 108,000 prostrations. So again, I'm not disparaging, I'm just using this as an example. So the belief there is that before you can really engage in the Dhamma, you must first prove that you're ready for this by doing 108,000 full... That means from a standing position, you fully prostrate yourself, you say a little prayer, and you get up. And you have to do that 108,000 times. before you can begin Dhamma practice. It's interesting that nowhere in the Pali Canon is that presented, that you need to do that. But that this is a type of precept and practice that the Buddha is talking about. There's no value in that. Get to the Dhamma. And we can do that in all kinds of different ways, put conditions on what we need to do. The continued preoccupation with defining and maintaining a self creates ongoing confusion and suffering. So if you think about, again, I'm using that as an extreme example, that I need to do this 108,000 prostrations, then I'm ready to begin whatever the next practice might be. What are you doing every time you do that prostration? You're reinforcing the view of an ego personality. And since all things are impermanent, how can anything like that or any other ritual have an importance? Did you have something you wanted to
do? No.
Okay. So in the Buddha's second discourse, the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, or the Sutta on the Not-Self Characteristic, excuse me, teaches that the elements that make up a self are all impermanent. He further teaches that the arising and clinging of these elements all have a cause, and that the cause can be recognized and abandoned. Enlightenment in the context of the Second Noble Truth means that the origination of stress and unhappiness, craving and clinging to objects, views, and ideas, has been recognized and abandoned. When the Buddha described awakening in relation to the Four Noble Truths, he said that that dukkha has been understood, you understand the First Noble Truth, but in a very deep and penetrating level, and the craving and clinging has been abandoned. So now we're getting into the actual dependent origination. This is what the Buddha awakened to. These are the Buddha's words. In the Patika Samuppada of Vibhanga Sutta, the Buddha presents the 12 causative links of dependent origination. Each of these 12 links are required to cause the self to experience confusion. And that's an important point. It's all 12 of these links that, as you can see, end up in delusion and suffering. And when you can understand and penetrate any one of these and undo them, the whole chain of dependencies falls apart. So from ignorance as a requisite condition come fabrications. That's the first foundation of dependent origination, from ignorance. But remember, it's a very specific ignorance. From ignorance of the Four Noble Truths comes fabrications. Fabrications are another word for conditioned thinking. So notice that there's no self here yet in this 12-link cause. From ignorance of the Four Noble Truths comes ignorant thinking, comes fabrications, comes mental conditioning that leads to further delusion and suffering. From fabrications, as a requisite condition, comes consciousness. And that's an important point. When we hear consciousness today, most of us think of consciousness as this overarching cosmic consciousness that controls and encompasses everything. It's not that. From ignorance to mental fabrications to this deluded thinking process that maintains ignorance. It's a thinking process that's rooted in ignorance. It's wrong thinking, right? And it's wrong thinking that has arisen from fabrications that are rested in that same ignorance of the Four Noble Truths. From consciousness as a requisite condition comes name and form. Name and form is written in the Pali as nama-rupa, but that's what it means, name and form. And name means identifying ourselves, having an intellectual identification with the form, name and form. I'm identifying myself as this physical body. This is me. And again, watch those chains of dependencies. This conclusion that name and form is me is rooted in ignorance of the Four Noble Truths. And it arises through this process of mental fabrications and deluded thinking. From name and form as a requisite condition comes the sixth sense base. Now, again, remember the context that this is in. We're not trying to describe cosmic creation or the universal creation process. The Buddha is interested in teaching us how does this not-self characteristic arise and is prone to suffering. That's what these relate to. So I'm going to read that again. From name and form as a requisite condition comes the sixth sense base. From the sixth sense base as a requisite condition comes contact. The sixth sense base is simply the five physical senses in every human body, moderated and directed by that sixth sense discursive thinking. And in this case, it's deluded thinking. It's founded in ignorance. The sixth sense bases are five physical senses impacted and moderated by our deluded thinking. Again, this is, remember, this is what we're talking. We're not talking about an awakened human being. We're not talking about cosmic creation. We're talking about how suffering arises. From contact as a requisite condition comes feeling. So before this ongoing process continues, something impacts our senses, and this is an ongoing process. It's not, I'm not talking about creation again. This occurs continually. Something impacts my senses. It first has to come through my senses before I can have a feeling about it. Right? I mean, that's obvious. Later on, I might not get to it today, but the Buddha describes each one of the senses as having their own consciousness. Remember, consciousness with this small c, just our deluded thinking process. There's eye consciousness, nose consciousness, hearing consciousness, feeling consciousness, and then that overriding consciousness of deluded thinking, the sixth sense base, right? From feeling as a requisite condition comes craving. And just a good example is that for the first time in my life, I tasted a fully ripe orange, and I got to have some more of that. From that initial feeling, I've created desire, and now I'm clinging to get that next really ripe orange. And the same is true for a negative thing. I bit into an orange and it happened to be bitter. I never want to touch an orange again. I'm just describing in a very simple way how conditioned thinking is now starting to take place even deeper. Something has contacted my sixth sense base. I've used my deluded consciousness to interpret it, and I'm creating more delusion now. From feeling as a requisite condition comes craving. From craving as a requisite condition comes clinging and maintaining. So now I've decided that I'm the kind of person that really loves oranges. I'm now creating an identity. And I might have to take the position that I really don't like oranges because I want I really don't like apples because I like the idea that oranges are superior to me. And I'll create an issue about that. And if you happen to say you really like apples, I'm going to try to turn your mind around. Because from my point of view, apples aren't any good, but oranges are really the best thing. And they're better for you too. From craving as a requisite condition comes clinging and maintaining. And if I can convince you to get rid of those apples and start eating oranges, man, I'm really something. I'm right, aren't I? From clinging and maintaining as a requisite condition comes becoming. Do you see how I just became? I'm an orange person, not an apple person. I'm a Republican, not a Democrat.
Oh.
I'm a Muslim, not a Buddhist. I'm an American. I'm not a foolish Japanese person. Do you see how, and how these, in this process, how not understanding this process leads to all the competition, the negative competition and violence in the world, all rooted in ignorance. From becoming as a requisite condition comes birth. So now I've just established myself in this physical realm and I've given birth to this idea of me. Forget about the idea of physical birth for a moment, although the Buddha is also talking about that. That's really not important. Out of ignorance, I've now given birth to an experience that can only be prone to suffering because it's based on an ignorant view of who I am. From becoming as a requisite condition comes birth, and that'll become a little more significant in just a moment. The real significance of this, and I'll talk more about it in week 9 in Karma and Rebirth, is every moment we have the opportunity, every moment holds the potential to give birth to a moment that's inclining our minds towards awakening or giving birth that's inclining more delusion and more suffering. That is the potential in each and every moment. That's the real question of how we want to live our lives. Are we going to continue to maintain mindfulness of the Eightfold Path and move towards awakening? Or am I going to fall back into deluded thinking and continue more suffering for myself? And again, do you see how dependent origination describes this process of how it occurs, but also offers the opportunity to undo the process? When we can recognize this as occurring, and it's a very simple and direct process in every one of these links is observable in our own lives. And it also, again, this will make even a little bit more sense next week when we talk about the five clinging aggregates, but this is what's happening to us in each and every moment. So we're at the point where from becoming as a requisite condition comes birth. Excuse me. So you can say that this process up until this point happens outside of linear time. In other words, it happens in an unrecognizable instant. Unless we have a well-concentrated mind, and then we can see the process take place. We can understand how from ignorance, becoming leads to birth of a deluded moment or a moment that's inclined towards awakening. And that's the potential of the Dhamma is right there in that link. From birth as a requisite condition comes aging, sickness, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, distress, and despair. So again, the Buddha is talking about the entire process of being a human being. And we can get lost in that saying, aging, sickness, death, and follow that in a linear progression in our own lives. But sickness, aging, death, and all the rest of these unsatisfactory experiences occurs moment by moment in our life, doesn't it? Every moment we're aging. Every moment we're prone to sickness. Every moment we're prone to death. For all of us, we don't know when the next moment might be the last one. So again, the Buddha is not talking in a cosmic sense or even a long, drawn-out linear sense. He's pointing out what occurs each moment. And again, each moment can refine our minds towards awakening or towards continued delusion. Each moment is an opportunity of becoming. And if we can go back to that first foundation of dependent origination, ignorance, if we develop understanding of the Four Noble Truths, then we have the ability to give birth to awakening. Ignorance of the Four Noble Truths is that foundational ignorance. So then the Buddha describes, that's from the Samyutta Nikaya, by the way. Then the Buddha describes in slightly more detail and in reverse order each of the links. So now, what is aging and death? Aging is decrepitude, brokenness, graying, decline, weakening of faculties. Why is it important to point that out? Because nobody wants to face that. But the Buddha is saying, face it. You're in a physical body. That is part of the process. And the reason why that's most significant goes back to that quote that I mentioned before about the Dalai Lama. The purpose of time is to awaken. We don't have forever. As far as you're concerned, you have this lifetime to wake up. So take to it. There's an immediacy. Remember that a couple weeks ago I talked about the mindfulness of Bahia and how Bahia met the Buddha and begged with him to teach me the Dhamma now. I don't know when I'm going to die. And the Buddha finally relented and taught him the Dhamma. Bahia awakened. He walked down the street and Bahia got trampled by a cow and he's gone. He was right. We better get to it. So now what is aging and death? Aging is decrepitude, brokenness, graying, decline, weakening of the faculties. And that's true. Death is the passing away of the five clinging aggregates, the ending of time. And that's so important because there's this belief that somehow, and it's prevalent in Buddhist teachings, but in most religions, that somehow this ego personality, that which the Buddha says is not a self, is going to survive death. And even in the Buddhist traditions, there's all these teachings about achieving merit and gaining merit. So my next life is going to be better than this one. That points back, I don't want to get into too much into Christianity, but it points back to the idea that suffering is okay because we'll get a reward later on. It's not. Suffering is a distraction that takes away our lives, especially when we get caught up in it. The point is to recognize that and abandon it. Not to engage in activities that will help us when we're dead. The ending of time. But we get caught up in it, don't we?
It's so ridiculous when you put it like that.
But it is ridiculous, isn't it?
But that's not what Christianity...
I don't want to get into the argument. But you're right. It's not the general belief, but it's the general application. The Buddhist beliefs is not what it is today either, but that's the modern application. So now what is birth? Birth is the descent, the coming forth, the coming to be. Birth is the appearance of the six sense bases and the five clinging aggregates. So remember in that chain of dependencies. Birth is the appearance of the six sense bases It's, and again, we're not talking in a cosmic sense. The birth of suffering is when we start interpreting things as myself and through the sixth sense base. I have a feeling, something occurs to me, I identify with it, I've now given birth to delusion. Clear? Great, because that's it. We can go now. Again, finishing up the Buddha's words. Now, what is becoming? Becoming is the sensual becoming, form becoming, and formless becoming. That formless becoming is, again, it's not magical or mystical. It points to the idea that I can become myself even after death when I'm free of the physical. And if I do all the right things and follow all the right teachings, I'm good to go. I can't wait to die because that's going to be wonderful. Well, you just missed your whole life when you think that way. So this is explaining that the belief in a self is reinforced by sensory contact and is proliferated by believing in an individual personality being born, i.e. becoming form. This belief is rooted in ignorance of the Four Noble Truths, as we've just seen. So before I go any further, do you see, at least have just a little bit of insight, how those 12 causative links ends up in delusion and suffering? And how it happens to a self that is itself not really a self? Phoebe had a question.
I've been reading about neuroscience and how the mind works, and so I am truly amazed that the Buddha was able to say and teach stuff that is now being proven through how the mind works, that a lot of what he's saying is exactly how
it is.
The mind works. And when the mind stops working, then the body stops being, and then everything, time stops.
Exactly.
And time isn't really linear and all that, and it's just, that's what really has me able to see it in a different way, see it more clearly, I think.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing that somebody that lived way back then was able to figure that out.
He was, when he's describing the modern science of neuroplasticity,
mm-hmm.
when he's using these terms like conditioned thinking, that's what it relates to. And you can look at a person's brain and see those connections being made. They're connections of conditioned thinking. And again, he described the underlying energy in the world as kalapas, and he described kalapas as these infinitesimally minute particles that millions of them come into existence and blink out of existence and end existence in the blink of an eye. What he was describing 2,500 years ago, physicists are just coming to understand that process now, 2,500 years later, using modern equipment and great, you know, those physical, what do they call them, colliders? Those are the tools they're using that the Buddha understood that many years ago. It is also ignorance of the Four Noble Truths to hold the belief that the ego personality becomes formless at death but survives physical death as the same personality, either in an eternal formless state or being reborn as the same soul. I thought that might have been a hand up. Becoming, birth, sickness, old age, death, and non-becoming is the environment of dukkha caused by ignorance. Again, we become so enamored with this thing called an ego personality that we overemphasize the importance of the life of the ego personality and miss the underlying experience of an awakened human being because we're attached to this thing that is of no substance. Again, we're missing out on the life, on the potential of our own lives. The links of clinging, craving, feeling, contact, and the sixth sense base, name and form, consciousness, and fabrications, are all part of the process of a self arising from ignorance. This process is maintained by continued ignorance, which furthers karma, and I'll talk about that more in week 9. I don't want to leave it hanging, but I don't want to get into it right today. The Buddha then describes how clinging to the notion of a self maintains this feedback loop of the sixth sense base, establishing a self and maintaining the cycle of birth, death, and rebirth. And again, remember, that's most appropriate in the birth of an ignorant moment, the death of that ignorant moment, and the birth of another ignorant moment. If I maintain delusion, that's exactly what I'll be doing. And what is the Buddha's words? And what is clinging and maintaining? There are four types of clinging. Clinging to sensory stimulus, clinging to views or conditioned thinking, clinging to precepts and practices, 108,000 prostrations, or endless chanting or anything else that we might describe or come up with that is important as a ritual. And then the last thing he says, and clinging to a doctrine of self. Even then, the Buddha studied all of the spiritual teachings. You really can't call them religions yet back in human history. And he rejected every one of them because they all promoted clinging to a doctrine of self. They all maintain a self-identity in some form, usually in the promise of a better life after death. Most of them were based on that. Some of them were mystical in achieving mental realms, but still establishing a self in those mental realms. The Buddha is cautioning against developing or maintaining practices that are given validity simply from the positive feeling developed or the positive or commonly accepted views reinforced. Engaging in rituals or practices that continue a doctrine of self in any realm, physical or otherwise, are also to be abandoned. The Buddha here has taken a methodical route from the ultimate unfolding of ignorance, suffering arising from birth or dukkha, back to the second noble truth or the origination of dukkha, craving and clinging. Along the way, he describes what is clung to, a self that is dependent on continued craving and continued clinging to sensory stimulus to be maintained, going back to that sixth sense base. As an ongoing ego personality, I am dependent on contact with the outside world and moderating it through a deluded point of view to maintain this ego personality. So do you see how that inner part of the dependent origination works to establish the entire realm of suffering? Further on in the Patikasamupada of Abhanga Sutta, the Buddha describes how craving arises from feeling and how feeling is caused by contact. The Buddha's words, and what is craving? There are six classes of craving. Craving for forms, craving for sounds, craving for smells, craving for tastes, craving for physical sensations, and craving for ideas. And that last one, craving for ideas that are self-referential ideas. It's the only ideas that we want as an ego personality. And notice that he's pointing out these six classes of cravings are all tied into the sixth sense base. The individual consciousnesses that make up those six sense base, the I conscious, your conscious, etc. And what is feeling, the Buddha asks? Feeling has six classes as well. Feeling arising from eye contact, from ear contact, from nose contact, from taste contact, from body contact, and from intellect contact. This is called feeling contact. Right? There's a word for it, feeling contact. The importance of that is to recognize that this feeling that I'm having is generated by the sixth sense base. It's not something that is occurring. It's occurring naturally, but it's not occurring naturally to an ego personality. It's simply part of that process of becoming. I'm having a feeling, but do I want that feeling to further reinforce an ego personality or just recognize the feeling? That's what Mark was talking about earlier. It's just a feeling. It's not a feeling in the context of the Four Noble Truths. It's not a self-referential feeling or a self-establishing feeling. It's simply a feeling.
This has come up like three times now today that I want to ask. So something I've noticed is when I'll have a sensation and then I'll immediately identify it that, you know, I'm anxious, I'm angry, I'm frustrated, I'm joyful, I'm whatever. And then I will attach the story to the feeling. But I feel like even identifying the feeling or the sensation is getting into clinging.
It could be. You bring up a good question. And this gets to the question of just being overly analytical rather than... But it's certainly we're going to do that in the beginning. In the beginning, it's enough to just recognize that this process is taking place and have the question, am I labeling this? Do I have a judgment about this feeling, or am I just, and that's important to see that. Simply so you can then recognize it and abandon it. And what is contact? Phenomenon contacting the eye, the ear, should be phenomenal. Contacting the eye, the ear, the nose, the tongue, the body, and the intellect. This is contact with a sixth sense base. And what is name and form? Feeling, perception, intention, attention, all mental aspects of that, and contact. Discriminating consciousness is name. Getting back to name and form. I'm identifying this with myself, if this event or this occurrence. The elements of water, fire, earth, and wind, that which makes up physical forms, is called forms. Name and form is discriminating consciousness bound to or clinging to physical form. And so now we see how that process takes place. How contact keeps reinforcing this belief in an ego personality, and we use that contact to further maintain that deluded view. And what is consciousness? There are six classes of consciousness. Eye consciousness, ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, body consciousness, and intellect consciousness. So through the sixth sense base, contact with the world is made, and mental fabrications, including objectifying the self-referential ego self, is further. So remember, from ignorance comes mental fabrications. Now we're using this process to deepen those mental fabrications, that conditioned mind. We get caught up into this rat hole of continually maintaining this ego personality based on deluded views. And so then the Buddha says, and what are fabrications? There are three fabrications. There's bodily fabrications, there's verbal fabrications, and there's mental fabrications. Those are the three ways that a human being expresses themselves. And so our belief system comes out through that, through our thoughts, words, and our deeds. Getting back to the Eightfold Path, that's why it's so important to be mindful of our thoughts, words, and deeds. Because when we can do that, we're getting insight into craving and clinging and maintaining an ego self. Do you see how that fits in there? All three fabrications are caused by a wrong view of self. Fabrications result in a personality bound to a physical form that is perceived as I or me. So then the Buddha describes ignorance. And what is ignorance? So this directly relates to the Four Noble Truths. Ignorance is not knowing stress, not knowing the origination of stress, not knowing the cessation of stress, and not knowing the Eightfold Path leading to the cessation of stress. This is called ignorance. And this is in one of the key teachings of the Buddha in the Samyutta Nikaya. And when I first read that, it literally knocked me off my chair. Because for the first time I understood, this is what the Buddha is teaching. He's teaching the Four Noble Truths as the entire path to awakening, not just some underlying concept that the Buddha happened to mention, which is how it's usually portrayed. It's one of the teachings that we should develop an understanding. The Four Noble Truths must be penetrated. It's ignorance of the Four Noble Truths that leads to all delusion and suffering. Everything the Buddha ever taught was taught in the context of the Four Noble Truths. The Buddha awakened to this, to dependent origination, what we're talking about. His first teaching was the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, where he taught the Four Noble Truths. He taught the results of ignorance. Why? So we can develop wisdom. Wisdom supplants ignorance. Is that clear? So that led to the entire Buddha's teaching. It also led to the formation of this course, the reason why I put it together that way. Beginning with an introduction in meditation, then looking at the four foundations of mindfulness, so we start getting some insight into what's actually occurring. We introduced the Four Noble Truths, so we had the context for what was to come next, which was the Eightfold Path. Then we developed the path, so we had a framework for now understanding the three marks of existence. And now this week, we're learning how this whole process took place. So it answers the question, kind of what happens to me when I let go of all views. What happens to me, to all of us, is we're no longer ignorant of the only truths that we need to really be concerned about, the Four Noble Truths. The Buddha relates dependent origination back to his first teaching on the Four Noble Truths and teaches that from ignorance of the Four Noble Truths comes all confusion and suffering. Gaining understanding of the Four Noble Truths is wisdom. Wisdom brings an end to ignorance and an end to the distraction, confusion, and suffering caused by ignorance. Wisdom brings an end to the delusion of an independently arisen self. When all ignorance is abandoned, awakening arises. So again, the Buddha's words. Now from the remainderless fading and cessation of... Remainderless means no more clinging. From the remainderless fading and cessation of ignorance comes the cessation of fabrications. Notice how he's now taking us back through that process, but from showing us how an awakening takes place. From the cessation of fabrications. From the cessation of fabrications comes the cessation of consciousness, meaning the deluded thinking. We've abandoned conditioned thinking. Our thinking is no longer deluded. From cessation of consciousness comes the cessation of name and form or self-referential identification. From the cessation of name and form comes the cessation of the sixth sense base. That does not mean that we don't feel anymore. It simply means that we no longer use our feelings to establish and maintain an ego personality. Again, that saying itself has no usefulness unless it's in the right context. Because then the question is, well, what am I then? I don't have any feelings. I'm an automaton. You're right to think that way. But we're only talking about the ego personality. We're only talking about dependent origination and the Four Noble Truths. From cessation of the sixth sense base comes the cessation of contact. Contact no longer drives an ego personality. But the inference here that contact then is simply a part of life unfolding, and it no longer establishes an ego self. From the cessation of contact comes the cessation of feeling. Again, remember, in relation to the Four Noble Truths and dependent origination, I'm no longer using my feelings to maintain an ego self. From the cessation of feelings comes the cessation of craving. Since I'm no longer using that to define an ego self, I no longer crave. And fundamentally what that leads to is craving for further existence of an ego personality. That's the ultimate and fundamental craving that we all have. From the cessation of clinging and maintaining comes the cessation... I left out a link there. From the cessation of craving comes the cessation of clinging and maintaining. From the cessation of clinging and maintaining comes the cessation of becoming. Since I'm no longer so focused on maintaining an ego self, I'm no longer forcing the becoming of the birth of another deluded instant. So again, you see, when any one of these links are unbound or undone, the whole causative link falls apart. From the cessation of becoming comes the cessation of birth and giving birth to another deluded moment. From the cessation of becoming, once we have undone this 12-link causative chain, there's no causative link for any more delusion and suffering. And we undo this process ourselves within the framework of the Eightfold Path. From the cessation of birth comes the cessation of sickness. The cessation of sickness, aging, death, sorrow, pain, distress, despair, and confusion. Wisdom brings the cessation to the entire mass of stress and suffering. And again, wisdom of what? Of the Four Noble Truths. That's all that the Buddha ever taught. Everything else he taught was to develop understanding of the Four Noble Truths and to understand this process of how from ignorance, through 12 observable causative links, we create our own delusion and suffering. I'll just read this last to conclude. The Eightfold Path is a path that develops heightened wisdom, heightened virtue, and heightened concentration. All three qualities of mind are requisite conditions to end ignorance. Developing these three qualities creates the condition for the cessation of ignorance. Everything is a matter of causes and conditions, and including awakening. So we can create the causes for our own continued delusion, or we can create the causes for our own awakening. It's all up to us. It's not something that's given to us. It's not something that's imposed on us. It's something that we can develop ourselves. All three qualities of mind are requisite conditions to end ignorance. Developing these three qualities creates the condition for the cessation of ignorance. Dependent origination describes the ongoing process rooted in ignorance that fabricates the ego personality, and how the ego personality, how anatta, is maintained by craving and clinging. This is perhaps the most significant difference between the Buddha's teachings and religious and philosophical systems, including most later developed Buddhist schools. Let me just go a little further, because this is going to be on the website too. A modern example of this is the misunderstanding and misapplication of dependent origination used to develop a doctrine of interdependence, interconnectedness, and interbeing between individual and insubstantial ego personalities. As noted in the previous chapter, these doctrines only encourage and maintain craving and clinging. So a lot of the modern Buddhist schools have used just the words dependent origination and added interdependent to dependent, which is two different things, and use that to maintain a doctrine of self and that we're all connected to everything. Well, we are, but it's meaningful, meaningless as far as awakening is concerned. It just doesn't apply. It's one of those things that aren't useful to engage in. We're all connected on all kinds of different levels. We're all physical beings. Carl Sagan used to say we're all from stardust. Well, it's true. We all connected on suffering, on that level of suffering, because we all suffer, we're all prone to it. But there's no significance there in developing understanding. Dependent origination does not teach interdependence or interconnectedness or interbeing, which is a real common application. It states that from ignorance of the Four Noble Truths, suffering arises. The only interconnectedness that it points to is the interconnectedness of these 12 causative links. And it develops an understanding of the interrelationship of anicca, anatta, and dukkha. Right? Do you see that? That's clear. That's far enough, I think, today. It's a long class. So are there any questions, though, about this? Yeah, I know, everybody's tired. People have left now. So this week, you'll read the chapter on dependent origination. And you can, if you want to go into five clinging aggregates, go ahead, but I'll introduce that next week. And then we'll discuss this next week, too. So let's have a 20-minute meditation.
John, I just want to thank you for the
time. Glad you were here. I'll be interested to hear what your conversation with Danielle is.
I know. So
bring some more notes next week.
I will.
So we'll have a 20-minute Shamatha Vipassana meditation, and I'll go directly into metta. But if something comes up and you have a question at the end of class, just ask me. You know, now that I said that, I'm going to stop after our meditation. We'll take just a quick break, and I'll ask if there's any questions that come up, and then we'll finish with metta, just to make sure. So find your relaxed meditative posture. Gently close your eyes and gently close your mouth. And holding your back straight but not stiff, your ears aligned with your shoulders, your nose aligned with your navel, and holding yourself very loosely, very gently, very lovingly. Allow yourselves to settle into this room, settle into your bodies, settle onto your seats, settle into your minds. And take a moment to become aware of the sensation of breathing in your body. Just get a feel for what that's like. To be mindful of your breath and your body. And while remaining mindful of your breath and your body, notice that thoughts are flowing. We're conscious beings, thoughts should be flowing. The purpose of Shamatha Vipassana meditation is to not be distracted by our own thoughts. So when you find that you're caught up in your thinking again, simply acknowledge that and return your mindfulness to the sensation of breathing. I'll repeat that. When you find that you're caught up in your thinking again, simply acknowledge that and return your mindfulness to the sensation of breathing. Putting aside thoughts as they arise, remaining mindful of our breathing. And we'll meditate for 20 minutes. Congratulations on completing this week's Dhamma study. Remember to be gentle with yourself and enjoy your study. The most loving action we can take for ourselves and for all beings is to develop the Dhamma and awaken. If you feel that you would like to review any week's study or take longer than 1 week to integrate a lesson before beginning the next week's lesson, please do so. There is a lot to integrate. Continue to integrate your meditation practice into the broader framework of the Eightfold Path and the other supportive direct teachings of the Buddha. Keep in mind that this course develops the foundation for a lifetime of lasting peace and happiness. The continued development of these principles is based on your own continued right effort. Peace.